Hey there, welcome to Sauce Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, and I had a growth at Sauce Group, Zero Liquor, wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. Here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. Today with me is Yasin, founder of BCast, an online meeting tool for agile teams that we at Sauce Group bought last year and still have your amazing team on board. So welcome.
Hello, everyone.
It's great to see you here. It only took us a little over a year to schedule this, but glad you're here. Before we go into everything around BCast and acquisition, let's get into your background a little bit.
Yeah, so my background is like a typical tech founder. I started coding websites in high schools when I was a teenager and selling custom websites for companies. That's how I started in the internet. It was more than 20 years ago in 2000. I really enjoyed creating websites and working on traffic. I went to an engineering school in France, UTT, University of Technology of Troyes, computer science diploma, and learned more about businesses. I did internships at SAP, for example. It was really interesting. Then I started working in a consulting firm. For my parents, it was important not to start creating a business. Always want something really comfortable. So I started in a consulting firm named Wavestone. And I did there about 4 years. But also working on side projects, like iOS applications, marketplaces. And it was all failures. And it's only because I was not 100% on it. It's really difficult to do a side project and make it successful. So I decided to leave the firm and to start a business and be 100% on it. This was my first business. Because I was 100%, it worked. The idea of BCast was to turn any smartphone into a microphone in a conference room. I saw in conference rooms that people ask for the microphone each time to ask the question, which is difficult, and it can be, if you are shy, it's complicated to ask the microphone. So I developed a mobile app to connect your smartphone to the speakers, and you can talk in the smartphone and everyone hear you. So this first version of BCast was a big failure. I didn't manage to sell it to a customer. The idea was really original and creative and good, but the market was not ready to buy it. So
you know what? I'll just interrupt you for a second. You were talking and I was like, man, I need this. We have this event in Paris and we are going to have a couple of keynotes. Initially, we planned our event a little smaller. I thought, okay, who needs a microphone? We're just going to be a small group, so everyone's going to hear each other. But we grew and I desperately need microphones, which are very difficult apparently to find in Paris. And yeah, I mean, I would buy that.
But all the competitors also they stopped their activity. It means the market is not ready. In the US, in Europe, it's the same issue. So we made the first pivot. Instead of downloading an app, we created a SaaS website where you can ask your question by typing it. It displays on a projection screen. It was easier to install and understand. Starting from that, companies started to purchase licenses. This was the beginning of BCast.
How did you understand what to pivot to? Because I feel like, you know, from all the talks here, first of all the tech founders are super scared of pivoting because, hey, we had this idea and it was supposed to work and how are we going to give it up? And second, what do you pivot to? How do you get this idea?
It's always good to start with something. The first idea is never the best one. Then you start asking customers, and if they don't pay, it means they don't want to pay. Listening to their feedback is important. They said that installing an app during an event is complicated. So you have to develop something that you don't install. The voice system is also complicated, so maybe just texting the question is better. Then see the competition, and you see that there is no competitor in the microphone area, but lots of competitor for polling and Q&A texting. So this is where you say, okay, the market wants something simpler, just texting the question or answering a poll. Because there is lots of competition, it means there is a market. That's why I decided to buy. It's easier to go to a competitive market than an empty market. And it was a good opportunity.
Yeah, that's great. Well, going into a competitive market means there is a market, but it also means there are competitors. And you have to somehow differentiate yourself and find that perfect customer for your solution. So how did you go about that? How did you find your ICP?
There is a lots of competitors. They have lots of customers. But when you start, you don't need lots of customers. You just need 1, 2, 3 customers to optimize, to fine tune your application. You just do some cold outbound to get your 3 or 4 first customers. Then you listen to their feedbacks and then you develop a good solution. Then there is the word of mouth and bring you other customers. And this is how you get up and competitive step by step. You don't want to have all the customers the first year, but if you think step by step with faith and perseverance, you achieve that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was talking to the other founder here on the podcast, and he was reminiscing about their first days with their tool. And he was like, yeah, when we were smaller and we were getting this, you know, first 3, 10, 100 customers even, it was very difficult to say no because, well, we were just getting any customer out there. And at some point, some of them had to really teach about our tool and like kind of educate what we can do. And they didn't really know how to work with us, but they really wanted to. And only then, after a couple of years, they started to learn who to say no to. When was the point when you decided that these are the only people and companies that we are going after?
I think it was natural because the first years, it was always the same buyer. It was an event agency or an event manager. It was more complicated when we started to address other markets like learning and meetings. When we addressed a learning market, it was learning managers and HR managers. And for the meetings, it's really complicated to identify a clear buyer persona. And I think having lots of buyer persona like we had at Bcast is something that really slow down our growth, and we should started to do that, to focus on the buyer persona to be more impactful.
Okay, I see. Well, depending on who you're going after, you should probably tailor your go-to-market strategy. You mentioned outbound at first. How did you then change it over the years?
Yeah, when you start a business, you don't have the choice than doing outbound because nobody knows you, and creating an inbound strategy takes time, maybe 1 year, 2 or 2 years. So yeah, the first year I did lots of cold outbound, going to trade shows, having some partnerships. And the next years, we started creating content to develop the inbound marketing with some marketing automation. But also we had the chance that we had for each customer, lots of participants. So the participants discover Bcast during the event. That makes us some free ads. And I think we stopped the cold outbound because it didn't work so well, but we continued doing some to boost the word of mouth and pushing users to upsell and to talk about Bcast.
Okay. So over the years, we've seen waves. saying trade shows are dead, or SEO is dead, or content marketing is not as attractive to your buyers as you thought it would be. From what you're saying, I guess events and content marketing at the end of the day worked best for you. Tell me more. How did you approach it? Maybe not every event was the event you were going to. How did you choose what to work on and who to partner with?
I always select trade shows related to our market, like events trade shows or learning trade shows. Always taking a small booth and trying to talk to lots of participants during the trade shows. This is something effective, but less and less effective after COVID. But I think people are coming back to trade shows. Between 2020 and 2023, it was complicated. And content, working a lot on SEO, blog posts, white papers, and so on, takes time, but it's really efficient. For example, in Bcast, we have lots of keywords where we are first on Google, and it brings a lot of traffic on the website. We have a good domain authority, and there is still room to improve. I think the best growth is from the product. So yeah, product-led growth is, I think it's the best, better than content, events, and so on. If the product is good and viral, it can grow by itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you reach that morality? You know, everyone's talking PLG, everyone's talking about taking the first place on Product Hunt and stuff like that. So how do you, in an example of Bcast, how did you guys get PLG to work for you?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Bcast is particular because when you use Bcast, you use it an event, it's natural to discover it. In a classical SaaS, the classical hacks are, if you invite friends, you get free subscriptions. If you post on LinkedIn or Twitter, you get some discounts. You work on creating a collaborative tool to work with your coworkers, friends, and you make it social. If you make it social, then you get virality and product growth, and it's natural.
Just to your point about the events, we're also talking here quite a bit about that. Events are getting a little bit harder. And the hypothesis here was the fact that no one's really going to conferences and trade shows to listen to keynotes or even to just look at your laptop while you're demoing your product. But everyone is going to network and learn about you and your company and the culture that you're growing. Have you noticed anything like this in recent years? And maybe started working on founder brand or just bringing more of a brand awareness to boost the growth?
I noticed, for example, since COVID, the emerging of podcasts and webinars is really good because it's simple to organize and for participants, it's simpler to watch or to hear. I subscribe to like 20 podcasts and I listen to them when I do my sport. Of course, your podcast, I'm a big fan. And webinars also are something really good. If you have good headlines, you can attract lots of participants. People don't need to go to conferences, but we go to events for networking, for meeting face-to-face. Something still important. Next week, I will be at B2B Rocks, hoping to meet some founders and other B2B owners, and also having a dinner with founders on Tuesday. it's good to create true relationships, to meet with people. I don't go to those events to for a conference or something like that. For that, I prefer to listening podcasts and watching webinars or replays.
Yeah, that makes sense. You can always watch a recording from a conference. It's often on YouTube. So I totally agree with you. You are now a part of SaaS Group too, right? You know, what we're building with the community here, we feel like smaller events, and we intentionally keep them small, are so much better in terms of getting together people who have something to discuss, who are kind of in the same, well, first of all, in the same industry, right? They are kind of similar stages of businesses they're growing. So really getting everyone in the same room and making sure it's not too overwhelming, so everyone gets to talk to each other and really build those connections and relationships, I think is really beneficial. Talking about relationships and getting people excited about your product, at some point you decided to raise funding for Bcast. Apparently, and again, please tell me this story, there have been quite a few investors into Bcast. So was the story there? Why did you decide that Bcast needed that influx of funding? And how did you go after your investors?
I think when you are a first-time founder, raising fund can be reassuring. Having senior investors make you feel comfortable, they can give you good advice. This is what you think when you create your first company. I was asking for help. This is why I wanted to raise funds and also to accelerate, because I had high growth and I expect to accelerate. I expected that. And because it was a first-time company, I raised funds to have advisors and a framework, something reliable. And I didn't regret it. I created with the same co-founders a new company, and we don't know yet if we will raise funds because we have more experience. So yeah, I first raised funds not only for the money but for the experience. I was happy with that. I wanted to raise a lot, so I had 40 investors, 40 shareholders to manage, which was complicated. It took me time. Maybe I should not raise with so many investors. But it was a good experience. I raised two times. We don't know. Maybe I would be in the same stage with or without fundings, but we never know. But I think it helped me to have this framework and advice and better strategy. But yeah.
That's interesting, because lately the narrative, especially on social media, is that you go after the VCs and you have an idea that you're going after more experience or some kind of support and advice. But again, just the narrative on social media is that, well, usually those people have never built their own companies or, you know, successful companies. So maybe you can share if you actually reached your goal of getting that advice and expertise that you're looking for.
Yeah, I think for a first-time founder, the advice are good from the investors. You learn lots of things. If you're a second-time founder, you will be more attentive to the money than the advice, because it will be the same pieces of advice. As a second-time founder, you will raise more carefully, because this time you know why you raise. When you are a first-time founder, you just want to raise. You don't know how much, you don't know with who, but you just want to raise. Most of the time it's good if you are a first-time founder, but you have lots of bootstrapped startups. I'm impressed, because they do sometimes better than funded company. I think this is a better model, bootstrap, but it's harder because you have to scale without any fundings.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the acquisition, because ultimately it all led to us buying Bcast, and that's a validation from us as well. It's a great product and you have an amazing team. We're always super impressed with everything you guys put out there. So Tell me a little bit more. When did you decide to sell and why SaaS Group?
We decided to sell in 2023 because I raised funds and our shareholders wanted to exit after more than 5 years in the cap table. I started looking for buyers in 2023. I took a subscription in Crunchbase and looked at the companies that acquire the most, and there was SaaS Group. So I found quickly SaaS Group, and I met quickly Dirk and Pavel, and it was really, really quick and a smooth process. So we did everything in 3 months, but it was really smooth, and I really enjoyed the process. We did all the post-merging integration just after the acquisition. The people at SaaS Group were really nice, and they welcomed us very nicely. We went to Barcelona 1 week. It was really good. The team is still here and still motivated. They enjoy SaaS Group. They got help from the central teams. It was a good experience.
That's perfect. Did you do any buyer due diligence? Like you said, there are a few serial acquirers. Why did you choose SaaS Group of all the other options? If there were maybe some values that especially aligned with your vision going forward?
Because SaaS Group appears to me like a starship, like a rocket. And also being specialized in SaaS make it an evidence with those central teams and the strong HR culture, full remote culture. I was convinced that the employees at Bcast will be happy to join SaaS Group. Not like joining an old company with no remote policy. Most of the acquisitions, people leave the company because there is no culture fit. But here, there was a culture fit. So it's the same team even 1 year after the acquisition. The new CEO, Boris, is an old Bix. He started that 5 years ago. He's really motivated and he loves SaaS Group.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Talking to pretty much every founder that sold to us, it's really like a red thread throughout every acquisition. And some even say that, well, we approached you guys and for SaaS Group, cultural alignment was such a huge deal that we really needed to make it work. And we really needed to show how we're going to all work together and that we share those values. So it's great that we align in the fact that it's important to make people happy because they brought the company that we're buying to this certain stage. And if we keep making them happy, then they'll take it further. Yeah. Was there anything like super surprising during the due diligence? Anything you were like, oh, okay, never expected that?
I think it's the full remote culture and having teams all around the world. It's something really impressive when you start working with SaaS Group, having people in East Europe, in Spain, even in Turkey, in Africa, and working together like if we were in the same room. It's really impressive and showing that a full remote culture can work.
During the due diligence, even before we signed the deal, when we were going through financial statements, your culture and your metrics, was there anything that surprised you?
Pavel and Dirk, they were really quick in the process. They go fast and they understand very well what is a SaaS business. We talk the same vocabulary and we did all the things remotely. I didn't have to go to an office to show data or something like that. This was really good.
All right. And how did you, this is also a very important and sometimes emotional thing to do. How did you break it down to your team? That the company is sold, this is the decision that's being made, and these are possible changes that you can expect. How did you do it and how did they react?
I started 6 months before the acquisition. telling the team that we need to sell the company because of the shareholders. This will be a good process. There will be some change, but this is what we will do. So we started to tell them that 6 months ago. And when we signed the LOI, 2 months before the acquisition, we told them that it will be with SaaS Group. We were really transparent about that. When we signed the SPA, we told them that it's official. So yeah, we were really transparent. I don't know if it was the best methodology, because I think if I had to do it again, maybe the best is not to tell until the SPA is signed. Announcing it creates lots of fear and questions, and you don't have all the answers. So sometimes the better is to keep it just quiet and telling everything in one meeting when things are done. I thought it was good to be transparent, but if I had to do it again, maybe the best is just wait it till it's official. And that's why all the acquisition they do, most of them, they do that. They don't tell the company is for sale. They say nothing until it's done.
That's what I hear too, because when you start telling people the company is for sale, and even if you lay all your cards on the table, there is still some fear and there is still some uncertainty, and people are not sure, like, if it's completely transparent or something is going wrong and they better go somewhere else. And this is kind of the least that you want during the acquisition. You're selling the company and people leave you and to hire somebody else. So yeah, that's a very valid point. But post-sale integration went really well. Like you said, after a year, everyone's here. We're super happy to have your team with us. But you decided that you want to take the next step and build something else because you're ready for a new adventure. So tell me more. What's your next baby?
So because I spent on it about less than 10 years, and I think I'm a true entrepreneur and I like to create going from zero to one, I stayed the maximum of time to make sure that Bcast is well integrated into SaaS Group. And when I started to feel that the team is ready, I decided to launch a new company with my previous co-founder. I discussed that with the team. I as a shareholder, I stayed France ambassador, so I can help French founders meet a SaaS Group or talk about my experience to help them understand how M&A works and so on. So I kept that with SaaS Group, which makes me happy because I'm still linked to SaaS Group and I'm really happy to be a shareholder of SaaS Group. And I took time to create a new company with my previous co-founders, which name is Bilabex. And the idea came from Bcast because we had lots of account receivables unpaid. When we did the transaction, Pavel asked me to make all the unpaid invoices paid. So I started a debt collection process myself. And I discovered that this pain was the same in all businesses. I kept that idea in my mind. I said to myself, one day maybe I need to create a SaaS to collect the cash from unpaid invoices. That day came and I pitched my idea to Quentin. He liked the idea and wanted to go even further. He wanted to add AI in it. He told me, hey, let's create a full AI autonomous agent and let him do the cash collection. And it's working really well. He developed the agent. I started to look for the first customers and it's working very well. You connect the agent to your accounting tool or invoicing tool. He can check all the invoices. When an invoice is late or unpaid, he starts to send emails, SMS, letters, voicemails to the customer. And he sends some follow-ups, nice follow-ups to keep your customer happy. He starts autonomously to collect the cash and you don't have this pain anymore.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So
that's nice that you, that little point you made, it makes nice follow-ups. It's just a tool that bugs your clients, like, pay me, pay me the money.
We want to avoid the pay me reminder every week. With generative AI, create a nice mail with custom and personalized data and information. He knows when to send the reminder, and he has some hacks to ask nicely for the money without creating frustration or conflict. That was the challenge we had.
Without threatening people.
That's exactly. We want to avoid the pay me every week, pay me, because it's inefficient. To be efficient in cash collection, you need better messages and the perfect timing when you send the reminders. And you have to be tough and tough. You start smooth, you start nicely, and you let time, and you can be more aggressive, but in a smart way.
I believe it saves a lot of time and pain of this kind of communication to a lot of founders. But I just have a couple more questions for you. 10 years with Bcast, 40 shareholders, an acquisition later. What's so far your biggest win and your biggest failure?
My biggest win is when I signed my first customer. It's always a great moment. And my biggest failure, I think it's all my side projects that I launched without being fully committed. Okay. It's important to be fully committed.
Yeah, that's true. All right. The last question is about a hack, right? So it can be, you know, how to find an acquirer, how to grow this amazing team, mental health, anything, how to be fully committed even.
I have a personal hack. When you hire a sales rep, when you do the interview, it's something that I do often, and something that you can test as if you hire a sales rep. When I do the interview, even if it's remotely or face-to-face, sometimes I leave a big gap, a blank in the interview. I wait and I look at the reaction of the sales rep, how he can manage the gap, how he can manage the dispose. Because I stop talking and I just wait like this, staring at him. So it makes him uncomfortable, but I want to see how he reacts, because a good sales rep should manage to avoid this kind of situation. Sometimes you talk to customers or leads and they let you in a big pause or gap during the meeting. It's one of my hacks during interviews. It's not something classical. I don't know if recruiters would like this hack.
If it works for you, it works for you. I mean, I just started imagining how I would handle it. I would probably be super uncomfortable. You're right. You don't really know what people expect from you.
It's better face-to-face. It's even better face-to-face, yes.
What is that you're looking for? What's the perfect response to this pause?
No, there is no perfect response. Just looking if the guy or the girl is social, or if of his awkward or weird, is to, and also to check if he can, if he can catch it as an opportunity, or if he will be, if he will stay uncomfortable, because lots of time you are uncomfortable with a customer, and what makes a good sales versus a bad sales is the ability to make your customer comfortable with you. Sales is about relationships, so you can test it quickly like this. Also, if the sales is smiling, and because if someone not smiling, uncomfortable when you let blanks or gaps, I don't think it would be a good sales.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in a way, sure. Like you want that energy and you want the motivation from a sales rep. But yeah, please don't try it on me.
No, but I don't want to hire you. I'm not hiring you.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been great talking to you. I mean, Bcast, like I said, this is kind of group's validation that it's a great tool. We love it. We love to, you know, try and take it to the next level with your amazing people. So, you know, hopefully we do it again sometime and talk about the growth of Billabex.
Thank you, Anna.
Anytime. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.